want to talk to you now about HASI and other certificates and what they mean. It's a necessary part of your function in view of the very complex legal structures throughout the world and in view of the various acceptance levels of humanity. We have had a problem in terms of valid certificates, which are valid to the city hall and valid here and valid there. We find out that the issuing body, for instance, in Great Britain, being a fellowship, is actually as highly legal as a certificate can get, any certificate issued from London. That's without any further argument. Just qualifies an individual by his society. And in Great Britain, all degrees, you might say, of any importance are actually issued by the society of those persons who are interested in that degree. Your British Medical Association, for instance, is the issuing body of its medical degrees. The Civil Engineers Society is the issuing body for civil engineers and so forth. In fact, I've looked in vain for a civil engineering degree or a nuclear physics degree in Great Britain, which is issued by a university. Oxford, no. And all around, no, no, no. What are you talking about, they would ask me, you know. And I'd say, well, how does this fellow hang up a shingle? Well, the Civil Engineers Society issues him his ticket, you know, and that's how he does it. Of course, you silly ass. Not so in America. In America, you have to be capable of bribing enough deans and so forth in order to squeeze your way through. And after you're entirely impractically trained, well, you get your certificate. And then they go out and get educated. That's the way the engineering profession looks at it. The engineering profession does not look at a university education as having anything much to do with an engineering education, but it's necessary before you can begin to learn to be an engineer. But all this time that this individual is learning to be an engineer, he does have the highest certificate he'll ever have in the field of engineering. The university degree is a fixation in America, and in the practical field of operation, however, is not very well considered. This is very funny. It might sound very well to the public, but it is not terribly well considered by the people in a profession. That is to say, a civil engineer is expected to have a civil engineering degree, but he is also expected to have had his real degree, his 15 years with Wright Aircraft, or something on that sort. I have a degree. I'm a doctor of civil engineering, the fellow says. Yes. And I work for Detroit Bridge Company in Ecuador for 12 years. Oh, well, yes, glad to meet you. Glad to meet you. Yes, yes, come right on in. Journalism, in particular, is subject to this. You walk into an office, for instance, to get a job in a newspaper and so forth, and you say, well, now, I am a major in journalism at Fluke University. And they'll say, well, yes, see the receptionist. And he says, well, I just saw her. Well, see her again. You never had quite as cool a reception your life as walking into any newspaper office with a journalism degree, as they know that this is not how you make newspapermen. You make newspapermen by pushing their noses into five-alarm fires and morgues for a number of years, and at the end of that time, you have a newspaperman. But today, it's getting more and more accepted that if you're going to become a newspaperman, why, it's awfully nice to start out with a degree. Degrees are quite interesting, what they mean to the public at large. Much more important than degree is professional status, classification of. This is a more important subject than the subject of degrees at large. The public expects you to have lots of pieces of paper, all kinds of degrees of this and that. The more you've got, why, the happier they are with you. See, it's just quantity. You might have a little slip of paper that says you were educated over a period of 85 years or whatever the optimum education for a psychiatrist is before he begins to practice, from the this or that or, and are fully accredited hangdog of the American Psychiatric Association or something like that, and you had this little piece of paper that said so, but it's a small piece of paper, and it's hanging on the wall, and you don't know a thing. You must be awfully stupid. But supposing you had 15 pieces of paper hanging on your wall, you see, and oh, you were just all over the place, you know, and it's degrees and degrees and degrees. Public is awfully impressed. They say, boy, does he know his subject. One degree all by itself doesn't produce this effect. And nobody walking in any field of healing is expected to stand there and give a lecture to the patient on the quality and caliber of the degree which the patient sees displayed upon the wall. The practitioner does not give a lecture on this subject, and the patient doesn't know a thing about it. His whole level of knowledge on the subject of degrees, their qualities and qualifications is, just about that high, no higher. So what you have to do is give him a professional classification which he finds acceptable. If you give him this acceptable classification for somebody who he would permit to pry into his private affairs, why, then you can get someplace with a preclear. And if he can't classify you professionally, if you say, I am a buffoonery psychiatrist, you see, and that's a highly specialized type of psychiatry. If you say, I am this kind of a psychiatrist, and so on, this doesn't mean anything to him. You're not trying to impress the patient. You're trying to get his consent to let you take a look in through his eyeballs or something and see if he is there. Now, that's what a degree means, and if you think it means anything else, it doesn't even have much to do with procurement. Because procurement is mainly taken care of by your public repute in your immediate neighborhood and so forth. If you get some good results and you conduct yourself in a business-like fashion, you will get preclears. But after they've gotten there, they might be uneasy. They will find something to be uneasy about. So let them be uneasy about how much they're going to be charged and take all other uneasinesses away. Well, one of the ways to do that is simply demonstrate your classification and qualification to this regard. And that requires, actually, at least 5 large pieces of paper, all of which are meaningful. And this doesn't say to me, it say that if you just had a bunch of pieces of paper printed up and put on the wall, that it'd carry the effect. All of these must have something with which the individual associates his trouble. See, they must all have something to do with what he associates his trouble. For instance, the great comfortableness that a patient feels. He shouldn't feel any comfortableness at all, you see. Actually, he should be in shaking terror. By the actual evaluation of the case, when he walks in to a surgeon's office, you see, to arrange for some surgery, and he sees up on the wall Mayo Clinic and the Bayo Clinic and the Slale Clinic on down the line, and this fellow was ran intern for the medical association team for a number of years, and did this and that, and he notices all these slips of paper, and it says this fellow is a resident surgeon at the Pew Hospital, and he looks at all these pieces of paper. Oh boy, this guy is really a cut and slash artist with a knife. It doesn't mean that at all. It merely means that he is a politician. That's how you get these degrees. Mostly it's political. And anything much to do with that, and whether or not you married a woman who had enough money to set you up with a fancy office. That would be the primary activity of the thing. But the patient is real comfortable and will lie down on that operating table without a qualm. Now, let's just talk in the field of magic. Now, that's big magic. Big magic. Big bunch of pieces of paper in a wall at a certain address, and somebody will lie down on the table and let himself be cut to ribbons. You talk about the production of an effect, then there must be quite an effect that can be produced by these pieces of paper. Because you understand there's nothing else producing this effect, and there's no reason for this patient to have any confidence of any character. Because surgeons are surgeons, and a surgeon, if he knows anything, knows that he has to operate. And if he can't find anything to operate for, then he will do an exploratory. And his idea of doing an exploratory is very, very meaty. If anybody were to check this up, if the public at large were actually to examine the figures on surgery and the effectiveness of surgery in treating the greatest variety of ills to which surgery is addressed, they would find that the result is not just ineffective, but quite unproportionately fatal. For instance, the Navy Department put this in as a law for a little while by the Bureau of Medicine Surgery. In case of ulcers, operate. See, that they actually were operating on that basis. Operate. And I guess there had been Operation Tinian and Operation Hiroshima and Operation Blue Light and so forth until the medical department of the Navy had finally decided medicine surgery that it could have an operation too. No other reason for this that anybody who was suspected of having an ulcer should be operated on and have half his stomach removed. This was a law that was actually published one year. So that anybody who was in a hospital with ulcers was immediately approached and made ready for surgery. The guy might have been getting real well and so forth. Didn't matter. And they cut this off after a little while because they found out that about 25% of the people died. And they didn't die on the first operation. They died on the second operation. And those few that scraped through on the second operation always died on the third. There's nobody ever survived four ulcer operations, but there were plenty of surgeons willing to give four. So you see, we're not supported by practical evidence here that he should lie down on the operating table. This is all I'm trying to drive home. Now, you have to support this. The willingness of the patient, preclear, or group of preclears, when they arrive, to have the heads looked into. What's going to make them willing to sit down on the couch? Not the perfume of the shaving lotion you use. That won't do it. Not your 85 or 86 years in the Walnut Lodge sanitarium, something like that. Because they know that psychiatrists treat insane people. If they know anything, they know that. I just discovered that recently. People don't think of psychiatry as anything but those guys who handle nuts. And that's the colloquial classification. And, oh, yes, I know a psychiatrist. He handles crazy people. No, period. That's fine. So we will confirm the classification in all of our Scientology publicity. So who is a psychiatrist? Psychiatrist is a fellow who handles insane people, of course. You mean, am I a psychiatrist? Do I look like the kind of a fellow that's handling... No, I handle nobody but sane people. We're reasonable around here. Please don't insult me. Well, you do handle emotionally disturbed people? Oh, no, no, you're talking about psychoanalysis. You're talking about psychology. For heaven's sakes, come up to present time. Psychiatry handles the insane. Psychology and psychoanalysis handles the neurotic. Sane and capable people are handled in the field of Scientology, and these are the three divisions of mental activity. This is the three divisions of mental activity. No, don't you realize this, you stupid ass? Now, how are you going to get this patient willing to sit down there and have you look into his eyes? Well, actually, I'll tell you just exactly how a psychiatrist does it. He has a little certificate on the wall that says he's a medical doctor. And he's got another little certificate on the wall that says he's a member of something. But mainly he sits in an environment, an insane asylum, which seems itself to advertise the fact that it has something to do with deranged minds. And the people who come in there have no other choice. They are shipped there by other determinism and treated likewise. So you see, the psychiatrist doesn't really have this problem, does he? He's actually permitted to practice and do brain operations, give electric shocks, incarcerate people, beat them, whip them, starve them, put them in wet packs, give them insulin shocks, metrazole, break their spines, do almost anything he wants to do simply because he's a medical doctor. We never quite found the statute by which a medical doctor could not be convicted of assault, but that is the way that certificate is adjudicated. And he is there as a medical doctor. And he is in an insane asylum, so this, of course, gives him the rights across the board. Well, how would you straighten this out? I mean, I'm talking round and round here. A sane person, by his own consent, asking you to look into his head and into his troubles, believe me, has got to have a lot more assurance than that psychiatrist has. Actually, generally, the medical doctor, by the way, does this with a nurse. He puts a nurse in a white starched uniform. I've never seen a medical doctor's receptionist handle anything bloody yet, but I suppose they do occasionally, although if he's really active doctor, he has a nurse helping him, but his receptionist is outside there dressed as a nurse. This is a badge of office, and is nothing else than a badge of office. What, then, is going to convince these people that you should be able to work upon them? A job that has to be done before you do it. See, it's got to be done. The moment he walks in, or the moment he walks up to you, or something of the sort, the job has to be done. The church solves this and lets people look into their hearts and souls and so forth by wearing a badge. They turn their collars around backwards so it won't look like they're looking straight at the fellow. And therefore, they can talk freely to people on the street and so forth. But the public will accept a clergyman as a repository for hard luck, as somebody qualified to look into their minds. The public accepts this and doesn't accept the psychiatrist. A survey conducted by Collier's Magazine in the United States demonstrated that the very, very largest percentage of American families, when consulted on this subject, door-to-door campaign, were of the opinion that anything would be better than psychiatry. Because they see it in their reports in industry, the word psychology and psychologist is fairly well supported. That's fairly well supported by industry. Industry would let a psychologist look into their problems much faster than they let a Scientologist look into their problems, by the way. Because this is a word. It doesn't mean anything. There is no such degree in a university as a doctor of psychology. And yet, they would be surprised, a business organization, to suddenly discover that this psychologist that they had just employed had a degree of M.A., at best, you see, or maybe doctor of philosophy. They'd be very upset about this if they really realized that, because they wanted a psychologist, damn it. And what they want, they get, you know. That's General Motors and the rest of them. They want somebody to look into this accident-prone problem that they know has come up because everybody's getting killed in plant number 6 and a lot of accidents happen around there. Well, the thing to hire is a psychologist. They know this, but what is a psychologist? Since there is no real definition of what a psychologist is, looks like you'd have to fill that bill, wouldn't you? There's no such thing, you see, as a psychologist. There is a doctor of philosophy, and there's a bachelor of arts who has majored in psychology. This looks very confusing. There's a doctor of philosophy who has majored in psychology. But when we say this word psychologist, we're talking about thin air. And yet the public at large knows there are these things called psychologists. And industry knows there's these things called psychologists. And the public at large knows there's these things called clergymen. So what you going to do? What you going to do? Before you are real to them, they must have agreed on what you are and what you are doing. Then you are real to them. It's possible they wouldn't even see you as you walked down the street if they had no agreement as to what you were. You see, that's the possibility, that they wouldn't even see you as you walked down the street. You see that? They are label happy. They must have a classification for all things. Now, trying to tell people what a Scientologist is necessitates telling them what a Scientologist does, what Scientology itself is. And if you give them a single dichotomy on this, if you just give them a single line on this, you say, Scientology is, and they say, well, that's psychology, and you say, no, not quite, and something else, no, not quite that, no, not quite that. You're not talking in a plus and minus, you see? And you get no reality with them at all. They can't get a certainty on a single item. All right, they got to associate it before they can get a certainty. Therefore, you had better tell them immediately a prearranged, put you in your place thing about what a Scientologist is. You tell them a Scientologist is so-and-so, a psychoanalyst is so-and-so, and a psychiatrist is so-and-so, and then they'll understand exactly what you are. They'll be very gratified about the whole thing. See, you'll have to give them the two other categories before they understand the first category. So never mince around about it. Just give them the two other categories real quick. Not apologetically, but just so they can understand. And that is, of course, the hottest one that we have on that at the moment. There could be many of them. Is simply say, well, all right, I'm a Scientologist. And a psychiatrist is somebody who treats the insane. And a psychoanalyst is somebody who treats the very neurotic or the emotionally disturbed. And a Scientologist treats sane people and raises their employment capability and squares them around so that they can function better in life. It's interested in the functioning of human beings, not their problems so much. You see? And you tell them that real quick, and they just stand there and look at you and say, well, that's right. Then I must be talking to the right man. Because I know that I'm not crazy. And the popularity of the word has been in contest several times. They said Dianetics was a much more popular word than Scientology. I disagree with that thoroughly. The world knows this word called science, and it hasn't got anybody owning it any place, really. There's this thing called a scientist. And so forth, and Scientologist is a quite digestible word. It hasn't been repeated very often to the public at large, however. Now, we're taking care of repeating that now as we go out in the operations throughout various cities. We're going to make sure that word gets repeated, and the people know exactly what it is and what people do. Now, how about you in your office, though? The fellow comes in, and he says, I've got problems, and I heard from my neighbor that you did something about problems. Just what can you do about the so forth? Well, you better let your wall answer that. Although it may seem to you that you are very much bracketed up there, and it may seem to you that it's not terribly important. It's awfully important to the relatively uninformed person who comes to see you, or the group that you're trying to assemble, and so forth. And if you're a clergyman, you're not a bad man. This is obvious. Obvious. This is whole track stuff. Every time they have an electronic society, they got lots of clergymen. It's obvious. 76 trillion years worth of obviousness. The reason you don't like clergymen is because you recognize this, and you get a lot of engrams audited, and you start coming up the line, you start wincing. The clergyman, however, looks upon himself as a person who treats disturbed people and human problems. He looks on himself as somebody who treats people in trouble, and the clergyman feels that his field has been terribly invaded by psychoanalysis, psychology, and psychiatry. He thinks they have no possible place under the sun, moon, or stars. And so we get Bishop Shenanigans talking down all forms of psychotherapy. He's not talking them down. The Pope doesn't address large meetings of psychologists and so forth and send papal bulls out to them, which he does, just because he's trying to hold down that. He's trying to protect the monopoly of the Catholic Church on the subject of psychotherapy. The Catholic Church believes that it has the only workable psychotherapy on earth, and it's very possible that it did have. Very possible, because a confessional gives a person this, at least. They sit outside a booth, and then they can sort of push into a darkened area a verbalization of the problem, and then they can walk away, and the words don't follow them. And that is the benefit of a confessional. You let them put it into a mystery where it can get taken away or something happened to it, and they have stated the problem into that, and they're very thoroughly indoctrinated anywhere along the track and so on. They know then that the problem stays there, because that's a problem, isn't it? Q&A, dark area, a booth, confessional, and so on. And that's why a confessional works. And Freud got all mixed up about this. He thought a confessional worked because the guy went on talking. Freud was extremely familiar with the confessional. If Freud had fixed up his psychoanalyst with a booth with a dark window and let his psychoanalyst talk into it, merely stating what their problems were, he would have had a great many more cures than his people have achieved since. Now, just look at it with what you know about Scientology and realize that if you can make a guy get rid of anything, even one thought or one this or one that, if you can just give him the idea that he's gotten rid of any one of these things that is troubling him, then he feels he hasn't got quite as heavy a burden to carry around. He's very messy about his description of his problems. They have weight, they have mass, they are put places. And therefore you get the confessional as being highly effective. So people are very happy to hand out to a clergyman or somebody who has been properly ordained, a doctor of divinity and so forth, their problems. It is not startling to find that a clergyman is also a psychologist or a Scientologist or anything else, or a practitioner of spiritual healing or anything. It's not startling to find that a clergyman is well-trained, because the only learned people this society had for an awful long time were clergymen. For instance, Yale University, Harvard, all these places were seminaries one time, and they were actually religious schools. It would surprise you to know that the United States Naval Academy, I think before the year 1835, was taught solely along the lines of religion, and future naval officers were taught only religious things. It took our second admiral, David Essex Porter, maybe that was him, yeah, I think that was the boy, to take over charge of the Naval Academy and introduce this brand new idea that they ought to teach people about ships and military tactics. Brand new idea. And that, by the way, was after the Civil War. So you talk about how thoroughly learned religion seems to be, and people in religion, they are expected to be a vast number of things. They're expected to be. People just don't think that they are. If they have a problem in odds and ends of this and that and so forth, of a scholastic nature, all the way down the track, well, a guy to go see about it, if he really went to see anybody, would be a clergyman, the preacher, he'd probably tell you. America broke this tradition by this introduction of preachers and renegade churches all over the place. It broke the tradition pretty badly. Clergymen were no longer educated. They were simply on a shaman's call. But any wild, barbaric area is liable to develop barbaric customs or borrow them. And the shaman's call, by which a man of God or a witch doctor is simply chosen by going mad or being selected by spirits, so forth, is very common. So this kind of broke it a little bit in America, but it's not gone, not by a long, long ways. And today, it is the easiest method of getting somebody to unload his troubles. You would be welcome anywhere as one. Furthermore, if your wall tells the story that, boy, are you a learned character, this is all he wants to know. He wants to know what that wall's got on it there in your office. And if it's got certificates from one end to the other of it, boy, is he confident. And he will spill. Otherwise, he's terrifically reserved about the whole thing. This is true. You can test this all you want to. You'll find out that it adds up that way. Many a preclear has not given his all or worked well in processing simply because he did not believe that his auditor was educated to a level which... The auditor might have been very competent, but the preclear didn't believe that the auditor was educated to a level necessary to understand the tremendous complexity of this preclear's problems. The preclear himself is so impressed by these problems that he must be trebly impressed by the fellow who's going to solve them. And that's about all you can say about certificates in the final analysis.